Parshat Bahar B'chukotai really is kind of one stretch, and it raises a general methodological question you want to ask when looking at any of this. Was whenever you have parshiot that are sometimes joined, obviously sometimes apart, but parshiot that are sometimes joined, what does that mean? Does it mean that it's really essentially considered to be a single unit, that just because of timing we separate? Or is it really essentially two units that, because of timing, we join together? And if it's something that we essentially are separate units, we join together, then it's motivated really by size, in which case both Tazrim Mitzora, Achrimon Kadoshim, and Bahar V'Chukotai, the three sets in Vayikra, all make sense because they're relatively short. They're also thematically close. All right, Tazrim Mitzora is Tzarat and other Tumot Heyotzot Min HaGuf. Achrimon Kedoshim is about Kedushat HaMachaneh in a sense, and shares the whole list of Arayot, Aras Harot and Onashim, respectively. And Bahar V'Chukotai is clearly a single unit. The answer to the question is that there is no single answer, meaning there are some pairs that are really essentially separate parashot, but we join them for that convenience, the calendar convenience. And there's some that are really essentially a single unit that sometimes we have to break apart. It's been suggested that the one team, that the one pair, that really is a single unit that gets busted apart because of calendar considerations is in Dvarim, and that's in Tzav Vayelech. Right? And that belongs to a different shir. But Bahar B'Chukotai certainly have a lot to join them, even if they're not fundamentally one unit. And that is, first of all, that Bahar starts with this kind of weird interjection, because everything in Vayikra has been presented as being stated in Ohel Moed. And that means the Mishkan is constructed, and Hashem is speaking to Moshe and continuing the revelation in Ohel Moed. And then suddenly, Vayidbar Adonai Moshe Bahar Sinai Lemor, and the mitzvah of Shemitah, and of Yovel, and of commerce, and of redeeming land, and of redeeming slaves, etc., all the Parshat Bahar is given Bahar, which leads, of course, to the famous Machloket, Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Ishmael, about where the mitzvot were given. In other words, was it that all the mitzvot are given in not only in general but in perfect detail at Sinai and in Ohel Moed and in Avot Moav, or is it that the general was given in Sinai and the details in Ohel Moed? Depends how you read the title of Sinai. But what's critical is the very end of Sefer Vayikra ends Bahar Sinai. So that it's like a single unit. This is all that's happened on Har Sinai, which according to many Rishonim means, and the simple read of it is that this block of what in our division is three chapters, Chafei through Chaf Zayin, is really a block that belongs somewhere in Shemot. But it was put here for other reasons and because of the theme or whatever. But I want to cut right into the middle of it to the beginning of B'chukotai. Now, what is B'chukotai? B'chukotai is two things. B'chukotai is a parak at the end, we talked about last year, which is about hakdeshot and arachin and other dedications that a person makes to the mikdash and how we play that out. And that's the second half. It's really less than a half. It's like the third. And the first two-thirds, size-wise, of the parasha are a bracha and klala. Bracha and klala, im b'chukotai terechu and im b'chukotai timasu. And M'chukotai Telechu carries with it all sorts of beautiful blessings. M'chukotai Timasu brings with it a whole string of ever-worsening curses, all predicated on, well, if you don't get this lesson, then I'm going to hit you again harder. And the number that is prime throughout the curses is seven. Sheva chatotechem, yisari tetchem afani, sheva chatotechem, seven times. And it seems to be connected, and this is the way many Mefarshim understand it, is that the violation of B'chukotai that leads to the curses is really a violation of Shemitah, and that all goes back to the beginning of Bahar, which is, of course, Shemitah and Yovel, which are all sevens. So there's all these ties of the two pieces together. But I want to take a look, sort of not atomistically, but in a little window, I want to take a look at the bracha. Now, by the way, what's the location, you know, of the bracha and klala? Why are they here? The way it's generally understood, and I think this is fairly straightforward, is that whenever you sign a contract, part of the contract includes your obligations, and part of the contract includes your compensation. And part of it also includes clauses for failure to complete your mission and what the implications are. And every brit that we have from the old ancient world between a vassal, for instance, and a ruling lord, whatever, includes that. It includes not only the obligations from basically to the vassal to the lord, but also what the consequences of fulfilling and the consequences of non-fulfillment. And so we have two britot of this type in the Torah, one at the end of Vayikra, one at the end of Dvarim. And it's essentially one for each generation, one for the generation that's standing at the foot of Har Sinai, and just like Mitzrayim, and is getting all the mitzvot, and one is the whole new brit that is signed and contracted with the new generation in the desert, and that's in Arvot Moab, and that's the one in Kitavo. Chazal famously, we talked about this years ago, Chazal famously point out a difference between the two. It's a statement of Abaye. The Mishnah says that we do not interrupt in the middle of the Tochcha, meaning we don't give another Aliyah in the middle, so that you know somebody will stop in the middle of Tochcha and say the Bracha and call somebody else up. And the reason is not because the common practice, which is we don't give the Aliyah of the Tochcha to anybody because they think the Gabbai is trying to curse them, right? Which is why if a person says, I don't mind, then he can take that Aliyah. But it's because we don't want to say the Bracha on a Puranut. We don't want to have the Bracha said, and the first Pasuk you're saying, or the last one you just finished saying, was a negative, a punishment. And so therefore we read it entire. So what was our practice? Our practice is we start a few Pasukim before the Tochcha, and read all the way through, and then the Pasuk at the end is a sort of neutral Pasuk, which is no longer a curse, but saying this is the breed. However, Abaye puts a caveat on that. And Abaye famously says that this rule of not interrupting, meaning not breaking the Aliyah, is only true in Vayikra, not in Dvarim. Not only Torah Kohanim, not in Mishneh Torah. He says the reason is because in Torah Kohanim, he says the following, it's a loaded line, it's Gemara in Megillah, Moshe mipi ha-gvura amaram. That Vayikra is Moshe saying it from God's mouth, Uvalashon rabim nemru. It's all in the plural. Imuchukotai telechu. Right? And imuchukotai tim asu. Visati etchem gamapani. Whereas in Mishnah Torah is a statement, Moshe mipiatzmo amaran. Right? Moshe is saying it on his own. Uvalashon yachid nemarim. It's all in the singular. Im shamoa tishma. Im lo tishma. Tachat ki lo avadeta adonai racha basimcha b'tuv levav. Etc. It's all in the singular. What that has to do with that? It's an interesting question, but he points to this bracha and klala seemingly as being paramount. So I'd like to take a look at the bracha itself, which you have in front of you on page 1. You have the entire bracha. I just broke it up into sections, and it might seem arbitrary, but I don't think so. And I did a little color coding, and again, thank you very much to Elliot for his yeoman efforts in the Xeroxing and the printing. But what I did is to put after each section, and I indented deliberately, I put the translation of each section, and then underneath that, sort of a summary of what's going on there. So let's just read it through and see what's going on. Im b'chukotai teleichu. What does that mean, im b'chukotai teleichu? If you... Yeah, it's a little bit of an awkward phrase. Right? How would you say if you keep my commandments? Im tishmurut mitzvotai. Or im, you want to say chukim. Im tishmurut chukotai. And we do have such a thing as shmirah with chukim. That's not an unusual thing. So it's a little bit strange. Im chukotai telechu. That mitzvotai tishmurut vasitem otam.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Are the chukot all physical things?
What?
Physical?
No, they're laws. Yes. They're laws.
No, I don't mean that. I'm saying, are there thought laws in there, or are they all actions?
It just says my laws, but there's no such thing as thought laws. We don't have thought laws. We have action laws. Right? Yeah, I'm not sure what you have in mind by thought laws, but this means that you're keeping the mitzvot, but it, you know, it's using the different categories. What do you mean by thought laws?
Well, for example,
what?
I was just thinking, like, they, like, take it. I don't remember. There's certain things that are called chukot versus not chukot, right?
It depends what nomenclature you're using. But in the Torah, when the word chok in the Torah refers to an engraved law, seems to be like a hardwired law. Mishpat seems to be more of a juridical process, right? But mitzvotai tishmu v'asitem otam. So you notice that lishmor doesn't seem to be practicing. Lishmor seems to be guarding because then it's v'asitem otam. All right. So this is the condition. Right? And we still understand this phrase, and why there's the verb lalechet associated with this. So I made a suggestion that I already kind of jumped to, but we'll see it. Now, what's the promise? Venatati. I noticed that each one of the promises starts with venatati. Venatati gishmechem biitam, which means, that's why I broke it up the way I did. Venatati gishmechem biitam, which means, the rain will be in its proper season, which is critical because if it's rain and not in the proper season, it can be destructive, as much as drought in the season of rain. So it's going to be agricultural flourishing, which means there's going to be overlapping of seasons, so that while you're threshing the wheat, you're already going to be collecting the harvesting the grapes, and while you're harvesting the grapes, you're going to start planting the wheat. There's going to be such plenty, the seasons are going to run into each other. Now you could argue that Yishavtem Levetach B'Yartzechem belongs to the next passage. I don't think so. Because Levetach here doesn't necessarily mean security in a military sense, but it just means you don't have to leave the land to get food. There's going to be so much food, you will not have to leave the land. You'll be able to sit securely in your land. You won't have to import from elsewhere or travel to get it. And the next passage, and clearly is a new thing, and I think the word venatati sets it off, venatati shalom ba'aretz. Okay, so what does that mean? So we'll find out. Ushchavtem vein macharid. You'll be able to sleep, and you won't have to do nothing, and nobody will frighten you. You won't be afraid of marauders. Vishpati chaya ra'a min aretz v'cherav lo tavar ba'aretzachem. Both wild animals and war won't even come through your country. All right, so not just you won't be attacked, but also it's like, all more armies won't march through on the way. We're daftem etor vechem, which, by the way, seems to be backing up, because if they're not coming through the country, so why do you have oivim? Well, the answer, of course, you can have oivim. That's the way of the world. But what will be your status? Your status, you won't be afraid of them attacking you. You're going to be going after them. V'naflu lifnechem l'charev, and you'll be successful in beating them. V'radfu mikem chamisha mi'al, mi'al mikem rabai yadofu. So 5 of you will chase 100. This is kind of like the old jokes we told in 67. Right, you know, the old thing that ends with, you know, there was an ambush, there were 2 of them, you know, the jokes about, you know, a small group of Israelis beating up a way larger group of Arabs, right? Which is repeating the same point as in Zion. Now, notice that the next passage does not start v'natati, but it clearly is a new idea. Ufaniti alechem v'freti etchem. I will turn to you, and I will make you fruitful, make you multiply. So seems to be kind of a summary, which makes Pasuk Yod kind of weird. Because what's Pasuk Yod? V'achaltem yashan noshan, which means you're going to eat old grain, meaning that you will have so much, well, there's a lot of different possible meanings. But it seems to mean that you're going to have so much stored up from previous years, you'll be eating that. Yasham nechadash tutsiu. You're gonna have to get the old stuff out to make room for the new stuff, which is a little bit strange because it seems to be repeating the second paragraph. All right. So what's going on here? And then the end of it is again venatati mishkani betochachem. Now notice I shifted it over back to the right. You'll see why. Venatati mishkani betochachem. What am I going to do? I'm going to place my mishkan among you. Why is this different than the rest of the brachot? Well, let's see. V'lotigal nafshiyatchem. I won't reject you. I will walk among you. We'll have that relationship. I will be your God. You'll be my people. I am Hashem who took you out from being their slaves. And by the way, here, unlike the presentation in Shemot often, which is taking you out to be my slaves, right? And even later in Bahar earlier, Avadayim, here it's, I took you out and I broke the yokes of servitude and I'm walking you upright. You're a free man. You're no nobleman. Okay, that's the bracha. Now, first of all, why are these the components of the bracha? You would ask that about anything. If the bracha was all about plenty, you would ask why is plenty the main thing. If bracha was all about having kids, we would ask that. If it was a few things. So I'm agreeing that there's nothing unusual about this. Just asking why these are the components of the bracha. But I am a little bothered by both the sequence of this. I'll tell you why, because if you think about it, the sequence is a little awkward. And also by the opening line. Meaning, what does that phrase mean? And why those particular things? We understand that this is entirely a conditional statement, and the condition is our being loyal to the mitzvot. But you would think that it would be im shamua tishmu ubekoli. If you obey me, then this will be to happen. The terms are a little bit odd. The thing that I find really difficult is the last paragraph. And that's why I put it off to back to the right side. Everything up until the last paragraph, meaning everything up until Pasuk Yod, is about what? Blessings that God's going to give you. Here's the condition. You follow the mitzvot, here's what I'm going to give you. I'm going to give you agricultural profits, I'm going to give you plenty, I'm going to give you peace, security, and I'm going to give you fruitfulness, right? Propagation. Fantastic. And then we have Pasuk Yod, which is a little strange because it seems to double back to the agricultural success. And then suddenly, like the pinnacle of this whole thing is that I will put my Mishkan among you and I will walk among you. Well, that's very nice. It's fantastic. It's great. But it doesn't flow with the rest of the stuff. All the rest of the things are classic brachot, where God is granting stuff to us that allows us to enjoy our lives and live peacefully and successfully. And suddenly this Mishkan thing seems to be, again, a beautiful thing, but it doesn't seem to fit here. So I want to start by asking a much larger question, which we'll bring back to this. Why is Sefer Bereishit in Torah? Why do we have Sefer Bereishit? And I know that's Rashi's first question. I'm familiar, and yes, my name's Yitzchak, and I'm Rabbi Yitzchak, I'm not him. Right, but why is Sefer Bereishit in Torah? What do you have Sefer Bereishit at all for? Now, I'm not suggesting we should start with Achodesh Hazeh Lachem, which is what the rest of that Rashi is, because you certainly need the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim to understand many of the mitzvot. Right? But Bereishit. So you couldn't make the argument, which is Rashi's answer, which is, well, you need to understand that God created the world, and therefore it's God's job to give the land to who he wants to. He gave the land to us. Very good. And then Ramban's counter to that is, fine, so you need the first Pasuk. Why do you need the whole Sefer Bereishit? So Ramban's answer is that Sefer Bereishit is not just Yitzirat HaOlam, it's Yitzirat HaAm. It's all development of the nation. Okay, we understand that. But the Rashbam has a very interesting take on Maaseh Bereishit, on the story of creation. So if you think about it, we don't really need to know the story of creation. All we need to know is that God created the world. To know what happened on the first day and on the second day, everything, doesn't really do a whole lot for us. There's nothing we can do with it.
Unless
what?
Unless just something about each day that matters.
It matters in what sense?
Well, the first day that leads to Shabbat.
I understand. So, but you don't need to know the details. You could say, God created the world in 6 days, then Shabbat. You don't know the details. So the Rashbam actually picks up on exactly what Jason's saying. And the Rashbam says that we're looking at it backwards. See, we look at Bereishit as the beginning, and we're reading it through in a linear fashion. We have to remember that this is all happening at Har Sinai. Okay? It's all happening at Har Sinai, and Hashem is giving Moshe the Torah and telling him to write down Bereishit at Har Sinai, where he's giving him the Torah. And one of the core mitzvot in the Torah is Shabbat. And how is Shabbat presented at Har Sinai? And so he says, therefore, we have to actually have that background. What are you talking about? He created the world in 6 days. So the Rashbam reads Maaseh Bereishit as being there to explain Shabbat. Not the opposite way, where you have Bereishit and then build on that you have Shabbat. Bereishit is there to explain Shabbat. And there are several places where such things could be argued, and one that's explicit. Bnei Yisrael come to Har Sinai, and they're told Har Sinai, among the things you're not allowed to eat is Gid HaNasheh. But where do we find out the background for that? In Bereshit, in the story. That's the famous Sugya and Chulin, Daf Kuf Aleph. So, I'd like to suggest that maybe we should look at parts of Sefer Bereshit from, again, through a different looking glass. Turn the page a second, and you will see that in describing Avraham, and something curious about Avraham, you know, we always remember the trope of Elohe Avraham, Elohe Yitzchak, Elohe Yaakov, Avraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov. We have it at the end of the Tocha. Zachartia b'riti Yaakov, b'riti Yitzchak, b'riti Avraham's kor, v'aretz kor. But let's step back from that and ask, who did Hashem make a breed with? He made a breed with Avraham. Then what did he tell Yitzchak? I'm giving you b'rit Avraham. What did he tell Yaakov? I'm giving you b'rit Avraham v'Yitzchak. So it's not that the three are on the same footing. Hashem makes a breed with Yitzchak because Yitzchak is the chosen heir of Avraham. And Hashem makes a breed with Yaakov because Yaakov is the designated heir of Yitzchak. But Avraham is the guy himself. Okay. So take a look at Avraham's life and you see the following things. I'll do this quickly. But you have all the psukim in front of you here. The first thing Hashem says to Avraham is what? Lech lecha. Avraham's entire life is defined by movement. And by the word lalechet. Matter of fact, the pinnacle of Avraham's life, one could argue, is the Akedah, where he says, kach lecha b'yichad v'lech lecha l'eretz Moriah. And how does the Akedah end? Vayelech Avraham. So Avraham's whole life is one of lalechet. Kum hitalech b'aretz. It's always moving. Okay? So maybe the emphasis on Avraham walking is something that's used in order to sort of give the background to im b'chukotai Helechu. In other words, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying is if you are successful in maintaining and being true to the path of Avraham, then all this stuff will happen. So let's keep reading. Notice that Avraham is also one who is involved with mitzvot. That's right, mitzvot that he passes on to his kids. In the second passage, Hashem says, I know that Avraham yitzavet banav beto acharav. And what will they do? Vishamru derech Adonai lasot tzedakah u'mishpat. All of those are phrases that show up in our opening line, which is Im b'chukotai telecho v'et mitzvotai tishmeru la'asitem otam. All of these are Avrahamic phrases, right? And then, as it put the cap on it, when Avraham blesses Yitzchak and says, don't go down to Grar, he says, I'm going to give you all these brachot, why? Ekev asher shama Avraham b'koli. Not b'schutcha, b'schut Avraham. And what did Avraham listen to? Vayishmor mishmarti mitzvotai chukotai v'torotai. You have just about our whole pasuk jumbled in this description of Avraham. So maybe mechukotai telechu is deliberately hinting back to Avraham's activities in his life and Avraham's loyalty and fidelity to God. So now let's take a look at the things that he's blessed with. Say the first blessing is the blessing of agricultural security, because the rain will come in its time. What's the first thing that happens to Avraham when he gets to Eretz Yisrael? He has to leave the land. Why does he have to leave the land? Because there's a famine. Okay, good. Now, Avraham comes back to the land, settles in Hebron, and then take a look at passage 6. What happens when Avraham's in Hebron? What does he find out? It's a massive war coming through the land. It's all Cherev Ta'avor Be'artzachem. These four huge kings come through. They come down the east bank. They come up the west bank. They go to war. They quash rebellion. They take all these people captive. And Avraham himself has to go to war to chase them down. And then what is the essential problem plaguing the house of Avraham? The essential problem that from the minute we meet Avraham plagues him. Barrenness. When he first meets Sarai, the first thing we're told about her is V'Sarai Akarai, Ima Valad. She has no kids. And that's what leads the whole Hagar and Yishmael event. And that's what continues to lead the whole story, is Sarai's barrenness. So now we take a look at the brachot, and suddenly we see something very different. What's the first bracha we're given? Mechukotai? Mechukotai Telechu. If you're loyal to Avram's path, first thing it is, you'll never have to leave the land because the rain will come in its time. What's the second thing? You will never have to defend the land because the enemies won't come through with a sword. Maximum, you chase them out of the land. And it's outside, you'll chase them, and they'll fall. And what's the third thing? I'm going to give you lots of kids. Which is kind of strange, because it sounds like Avram didn't match up. You guys are greater than Avram? Not at all. Here's where things change. Take a look at sources 9, 10, 11, the bottom of the page. What does Avram do everywhere he goes? Because Avram's holech. What does he do everywhere he goes? Sets up his mizbeach. What does he do with the mizbeach? He calls out in God's name. Avram is walking around bringing God to the people. What does God promise at the end of the bracha? V'natati mishkani b'tochachem v'italachti b'tochachem. I'm going to put my mishkan among you and I will walk among you. Not you walk in my land. I will walk among you. Meaning you'll be able to stay put. And I'll put my mishkan in a particular place and I will be present among you. So, manishtana. Why are suddenly we granted these things that Avram wasn't granted? Because Avram Sachakol is an individual. Individual can't control land. Avram is the one who's blazing the path. Avram is that very brave, courageous pioneer. All we have to do is be loyal to his path and follow him, and then we get all the brachot that he sort of laid the seeds for. All the difficulties that he encountered in his life now become easier for us. And so, Im b'chukotai telechu is bringing us back all the way to Avraham. We're standing at the foot of our Sinai, and we're making a brit, and we're getting a promise, which is essentially a promise of, if you're loyal to the path of Avraham, all the things that Avraham had to fight for, had to finally gain security to be able to stay in the land and have agricultural security, how to drive enemies out of the land, how to finally realize the birth of Ishmael, and finally, the birth of Yitzchak, you're going to have a lot much easier. And what's the reason for that? That's why the last paragraph comes in. Because unlike what Avram had to do to go from place to place to build Mizbachot, I'm going to put my Mishkan in one place and I will walk among you. And that full circle bringing us back is what then enables us to live this beautiful life that's being described here. I don't really have an answer, at least as yet, for why Pasuk Yod seems to go back to the agricultural plenty at that particular spot. If anybody has any ideas, I'm certainly open to suggestions. But, we'll take it from there.